That song has another, like, that's the same tune to a song that we sing sometimes, but different lyrics. Anybody know what that was? No, maybe not. Maybe I'm just thinking that song, but I didn't know the words or something, which would be weird. All right, so what we talked about in the previous lesson was being children of Abraham, and we did talk and touch on this idea that the Israelites of old failed in their purpose. And we cited some examples of how they failed, like when the Israelites wanted Saul to be their king. They wanted to be like the other nations, and so they demand to have a king. When the Israelites are exiled in 2 Kings 17:15, you don't have to go there, but it says that they despised his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers and the warnings that he had gave them. They went after false idols and became false, and they followed the nations that were around them. The Israelites became more like the world and less like the Lord, and because of that, they had to be exiled, and they weren't very, very good at being a blessing to other people. Why was it the case that they became more like the world? There's a lot of answers to that question, but one of the answers to that question is misplaced fear. They didn't learn to fear the Lord like they were supposed to. So what we're going to do in this lesson is we're going to talk about this concept of fearing the Lord and how that actually breaks us free from the bondage of things like peer pressure. Because when we're at school and people are, you know, saying jokes that we know we shouldn't laugh at, but we feel like we need to because otherwise we're going to be ostracized, then we have a dilemma to work through. Not an actual dilemma, we know what we should do. But when it comes to moments where peer pressure becomes a big deal, we can become more afraid to become like the world than to follow the Lord. So that's what we're going to do in this lesson. And as we begin this lesson, I want us to get an understanding of what the word fear means. So can anybody give me any definitions of the word fear? Scared? What else? Respect, yeah. What else? What was that? I'm sorry, I missed it still. Afraid, okay, afraid, yeah, good. The idea of fear stems from being amazed at something, by thinking that it is great and powerful and grand. And the reason that we get afraid of something like a burglar is because we're amazed at the power that the burglar has, right? When the Israelites were afraid of Goliath, why were they afraid of Goliath? Because they were impressed with human strength. If Goliath was on their side, they would have been like, okay, we're good to go. But when that power was leveled against them, then they're scared. So fear, whether it's the trembling kind of fear or the amazement, it always boils down to how highly I view something. And when it's leveled against you, you're afraid. When it's on your side, you're comforted. So that's what we're talking about with fear. And by the way, I don't know if you guys have ever had like a burglar break into your house or you hear a noise in your house, the first question that we ask is, what was that? The reason that we ask that is because if it is a burglar, we hold in high esteem what a burglar could do, and so we're scared of that because it's leveled against us. So we need to consider some questions that will help us understand what it is that we fear in our lives. So think about this. What do you hold in high esteem? And intellectually, we all know that it's supposed to be God. Our answer to that is supposed to be God. But like in our daily life, what really shows that? What shows that we hold, how do our lives show what we hold in high esteem? Think about this question. What determines your decision making? Like throughout the day, the way that you react to people, the way that you talk with other people, what determines how you're going to make your decisions throughout the day? And then here's another question. Where do you place your trust and your confidence? The answers to these questions reveal to us what it is that we fear. And the problem that I oftentimes have is that my answers to those questions aren't where they should be. And a lot of the times we have misplaced fear. Because when I'm trying to figure out how I'm supposed to make my decisions or how I'm supposed to live my life, it's not often enough that I'm thinking, what would the Lord want me to do? And I just want to say a disclaimer at the beginning of this lesson that I'm not saying it is sinful to fear anything other than God. Like, I need to have a healthy fear of driving, because if I'm just driving willy-nilly and I could get into a car accident, I need to have a healthy fear and esteem for what my Toyota Camry can do. All right? So I'm not talking about that kind of thing. I'm not being weird with this kind of stuff. But what do you think our culture tends to fear more than anything else? Death is one thing. What else? Rejection? Yeah, public speaking is higher than death. And I'm glad that you said that. Why is public speaking higher than death? Humiliation. What else? Yeah, James 3. Yep. What were you going to say? Judgment? Okay. I think a lot of the times we fear public speaking is because we fear man. We fear what people are going to think about us. We fear if I make a mistake when I'm doing my public speaking, everybody's going to be looking down on me and I'm going to be humiliated. And what our culture does, whatever your answer is to what our culture fears the most, one of the things in the top five has to be the fear of man. And how would we know if we fear man? Like, how could we figure that out in our life? I want to talk about some symptoms that could be existing in our lives that would know if we fear man and their opinion of us more than the Lord. Here's one symptom: falling to peer pressure. You guys ever been there before where you're with your friends and they're suggesting that you do this, that, or the other thing, and you don't want to be the guy that says, no, we shouldn't do that? Because if you're that guy, then you're the Bible thumper. And if you're that guy, then you're the weird one that nobody wants to be around anymore. Falling to peer pressure. Doing what everybody else around you is doing, which, by the way, wasn't that the problem of the Israelites? They went into the land of Canaan. Have you ever thought about this before with Molech worship? Do you guys know what Molech worship was? Literally, there was a statue of a man that had the head of a bull, and his arms were out like this. Anybody know what they put on the arms of Molech? Their children. They would take their children, place it on Molech's arms, and then fire would come up around the arms and consume the kids from the arms of the kids to the legs and everything. And they'd be burnt up. And you wonder, why would the Israelites ever do that with their kids? Okay, try to picture yourself being an Israelite. You enter the land of Canaan, and you are surrounded by pagans. And you're not cool if you don't worship Molech. And if you don't worship Molech, everybody thinks you're really strange, and you get ostracized, and you get those weird looks. That's the culture you live in. You're going to think twice about worshiping Molech if that's your culture? We can see how the Israelites got involved in that. It was peer pressure. They wanted to fit in with everybody else, and that's why they started getting involved in that sin. And we're going to talk more about Molech worship in our lesson on idolatry. But here's another symptom of fearing man more than the Lord, is telling white lies. You know why people tell white lies sometimes? Oh yeah, I read my Bible 6 hours today, you know, just not as much as I did the other day. You know, because we want to appear to be more holy than we really are, or we want to hide the fact that we have some sins in our life, and so we tell white lies to make ourselves look better than we actually are. And that's a symptom of misplaced fear and fearing what man thinks about you. How about this one? Never confessing sin. Do you know why sometimes we don't confess sin? And I'm not talking about, like, you know, being unwise about how we confess sin. I think we need to have wisdom in that and, like, pick people that we really trust to be able to help us with that. But one of the reasons that we never confess sin, that sometimes I don't confess sin, is because, oh, if I say something to Jeffrey, man, he's going to think that I'm much more of a loser than I want to make myself look to be. So that's why sometimes we don't get friends that we get close enough that we'll confess sins to. It's because we fear what man thinks about us more than the Lord. And how about this one? Constantly wondering what others think about you. I think we can all say that we struggle with that sometimes. You ever, like, walk through the day and you're thinking, like, okay, I got to make my decision based on what people will think about this, that, and the other thing? That's fearing man. That's holding in high esteem what man thinks about me, and it's holding in lower esteem the Lord. When Peter denied the Lord 3 times, why did he do that? Fear. He feared what man could do to him rather than the Lord. He had a higher esteem for the power of man than he did for the power of God and what God would do with his soul, even if he confessed the Lord before others and died because of it. It boils down to fear. And this is a theme throughout the whole Bible. If you read the Bible through and through, or you do a word search on the word fear or afraid or fearful, you'll see it in there 527 times. And a lot of the times that the word fear is used is misplaced fear. It's because it's being put in the wrong place and people are not esteeming the Lord like they're supposed to. Now, some people will wonder, as we continue through this lesson, what about 1 John 4:18? Perfect love casts out fear. So, anybody know what that verse means in its context? 1 John 4:18 is talking about fear of judgment. The child of God, if they're in God and they're walking in the light, they don't need to fear final judgment day. They don't need to have any fear of that. But should we always have a healthy, high esteem of the Lord? Yeah, absolutely. We should always have that in our life. Now, what I want to do is look at a few passages that show us what the fear of the Lord does in our life. Look at Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. It says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. How many of you want to be knowledgeable? Like, how many of you want to be wise? Life has a lot of difficult situations, doesn't it? And wisdom, what is wisdom? How would you define wisdom or knowledge? Application of knowledge. My dad always used to tell me that wisdom was like, knowledge was like having a toolbox, and having wisdom was knowing how to use the tools in the toolbox. And that's a good way to picture that. Wisdom means that you know how to take what you know about the Lord and His teachings and apply it to daily living. And you know the outcome of what will happen when you do that. So if you want to have knowledge and you want to have wisdom, what do you need to have? The fear of the Lord. How does that work? Because when I hold the Lord in high esteem and I look up to Him and I am fearful and in awe of how great He is, that means that I'm going to want to learn from Him. And I'm going to want Him on my side, and I'm going to want to see what His Word says. This shows us that if I fear the Lord, that means that I'm going to study the Scripture. Because if I have a high esteem, like, okay, what are some of your guys' favorite authors that write books? C.S. Lewis. If you have an amazement for how smart he is, what are you going to do? Read his books, right? If you have an amazement and you look up to God and you're genuinely impressed with Him, you're going to want to read his Word. So this shows us, just as a little test in our life, if we're not currently studying the Bible and we don't have Bible study habits, it would be an indication that we don't fear God like we should, that we don't look up to Him like we ought to. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and we see that there. Look it over at Proverbs 14. Proverbs 14, 26. "In the fear of the Lord one has strong confidence, and his children will have a refuge." Have you ever noticed how people who have been in the faith for many, many years and have spent their life thinking about the Lord and serving Him, they're confident people? Have you ever noticed that? Like, on one level, they can admit where they struggle and the things that they don't know, but there's a certain kind of confidence to people like that. They're sure about what the Bible says about certain things. And they seem like a firmly planted, godly person. Why? It's because they put their fear in the Lord. Because when they highly esteem God and they're learning from Him and they're serving Him, He becomes a refuge to those people in verse 26. So if you want to know how to have confidence in life and surety, it comes and it stems from the fear of the Lord. Look at Proverbs chapter 16, verse 6. "How much better to get wisdom than gold, to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver." Wait, did I get the right verse? Yes. Oh, sorry, 16:6. I meant to read that one. I read 16. 16:6. "By steadfast love and faithfulness, iniquity is atoned for, and by the fear of the Lord, one turns away from evil." Think about this in your life. Have you ever had sins that you plan your schedule around and you keep committing? I talked about this earlier, but like, you can't go a day without doing it, and you just keep struggling with it again and again and again. Maybe it's complaining. Maybe it's pornography. Maybe it's sinful mindsets that you keep having. How do you get that out of your life? According to Proverbs 16:6, "By steadfast love and faithfulness, iniquity is atoned for, and by the fear of the Lord, one turns away from evil." When we learn to highly esteem God and look up to Him, we become more like Him. Because whatever we look up to, we become like. If you look up to C.S. Lewis, you're going to start talking like C.S. Lewis would talk, and sometimes that's a good thing. So, if you look up to certain people, you're going to start becoming like them. All right? So those are some of the benefits that we see from fearing the Lord and looking up to Him. I want to talk for the rest of this lesson, though, about how we learn to look up to the Lord and esteem Him like we should. Like, how do we do that? Look at Isaiah chapter 40. In Isaiah chapter 40, the first 11 verses, you have this idea of four messengers of God who proclaim this deliverance out of captivity, and God's going to rescue the people. And if you're the Israelites in captivity reading that, you go, wow, God's going to deliver us from exile and He's going to save us from everything that we've done. How is He going to do that, though? Does He really have the strength to do that? That's what the rest of Isaiah 40 answers. Look at Isaiah 40, verse 12. Who has measured the waters in the hollows of His hand and marked off the heavens with a span? Just think about that. How much water can you hold in the span of your hand? Like maybe 2 ounces at the most, 3 ounces, and then it starts to like topple over. What does this text say about God? He's measured the waters in the hollow of His hand. Like, God can just take His big old hand and just go like this and get all the water in the world in His hand. He created all that. That's pretty powerful. Look at what else it says in this verse. And marked off the heavens with a span, enclosed the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales and hills in a balance. You guys ever seen mountains before? God can just measure those things. I mean, like, we have to take dynamite to clear roadways through it. God can just be like, oh yeah, that weighs this much. Not a big deal. That's how powerful God is. Skip down and look at verse 15. Behold, the nations are like a drop from a bucket and are accounted as the dust of the scales. Behold, He takes up the coastlands like fine dust. The nations are like a drop in a bucket? I mean, you think about all the nations of the world. And you go, oh, they're so powerful. They got such big military strength. They've got so much money. They've got so much technology. This is amazing. And we get fearful of that when those powers start coming against us. But who's more powerful than the Lord, than those things? God. They're like a drop in a bucket to Him. And so when we see that, the more amazed we are with God, the less we're going to be afraid of everybody else around us and what they'll think about us and what they could do to us. Just think about some other passages. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. How did God create that? He spoke it into existence. I can't speak anything into existence. I can't say, cup arise, and then a cup gets up here. I can't do that. I wish I could, because that'd be pretty sweet. But God spoke the world into existence. You see what we're doing here? We're trying to look at concepts of God that help us magnify Him and look up more highly to Him, because the more we esteem Him, the less we're going to care about what other people think about us. And the less we're going to care about wanting to fit into everybody else around us and make the same mistakes that the Israelites did. Job 38, verse 35 says this, can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Has lightning ever came up to you and said, hey, which way should I strike? Never did that for me. Anybody? No? That's God, though. God can have lightning go, hey, where should I go? And God will say, check that place out over there. Go do that. Because that's how powerful God is. Micah chapter 1, verses 3 through 4. For behold, the Lord is coming out of His place and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth, and the mountains will melt under Him, and the valleys will split open like wax before the fire, like waters poured down a steep place. You guys ever gone rock climbing before? Anybody ever gone rock climbing? Okay, if you go rock climbing, you have to climb. But God, when He comes down to the high places of the earth, He has to come down to them. In Micah 1. Like, we're like, oh man, Mount Everest is awesome, and God's like, oh yeah, better come down there. Like, that's how powerful He is. And why is it that so often I end up caring more about what people think about me than what the Lord would think about me? And I care more about pleasing people and fitting in with this world than fitting in with God, who is so much more powerful. Look at Matthew 10:28. Matthew 10:28 says, "And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell." Don't fear people, and what's the worst thing that people can do to you? Kill you. Don't fear that. Don't fear death. But instead, fear what? God. The one who is going to judge your body and your soul. Okay, if I spend all my life fitting into this world and getting acceptance from people, but I lose my soul, was it worth it? No. If I spend my life serving God and finding fulfillment in Him, and I maybe have some people that ostracize me from time to time or think I'm a little strange for that, but my soul is saved, is that worth it? Fear God. Don't think so highly about what people can do to you. Think more highly about the Lord and esteem Him, and He's going to bless you because of that. And that's exactly what we have going on here. Now, can you guys think of any ways that we can continually learn to esteem God more highly than anything else? Like, what are some ways that you've learned to do that in your life? What was that? Read the Bible. The more that you read the Bible, and I'm going to add a little bit to that, it's reading the Bible with the intent of knowing God through reading the Bible. Because sometimes we can just read the Bible and be interested in knowing a bunch of facts and information, and for anybody that just loves knowledge, like, that can be a struggle for them sometimes. But for people, when we start reading the Bible with the intent of knowing God through the Scriptures, we're going to think more and more highly of Him every time we're reading the Bible. And it gets really exciting to read the Bible in that way. Can you think of any other ways that we can learn to really esteem God? Yeah. Yeah, in 1 Kings 8, when Solomon is dedicating the temple, what does he say a couple times in that text? When we pray toward the temple. Is there some value in praying toward God, or maybe on your face, changing up the way that you pray? Yeah, that gives you a more humble approach to God, and it makes you realize He's on a throne, and He's the King. Good, what else? Yeah. Nature. Isn't it, like, have you guys ever been to the Grand Canyon or, like, Denver, Colorado, or like, California is a gorgeous place. You've been around places that just have amazing mountains and amazing trees, and you look at that and you go, God created that. He spoke that into existence. Like, all these trees that you see right outside on these windows, maybe not so much on that side, but more on that side, God spoke those into existence. So when you're driving, you can think, man, God created that, and He just spoke it into existence, and that's really cool. Anything else that you guys can think of that helps us learn to esteem God more highly? I'll suggest this one. Paying attention to the songs that we sing. You guys ever get into this mindset where we start singing hymns and you're just kind of like going through the words, stuff like that? When we sing hymns like, "I sing the mighty power of God that made the mountains rise," picture that. Like, picture God making the mountains rise by speaking that into existence. And all of these things are just tools to help us become people that become more impressed with the Lord and less impressed with everybody else and fitting into this world. And that's what the Israelites missed. The Israelites became too concerned about what everybody else thought about them, and they did not get as concerned about serving the Lord and thinking about what He thought about them and being commended by the Lord. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 15. In 1 Samuel 15, Samuel tells King Saul to go and attack the Amalekites. And Saul is specifically instructed to not spare anything in the city, not even the ox or the sheep or anything like that. And after receiving the instructions, Saul takes his army to Amalek and they defeat them. But they don't devote everything to destruction. Saul takes and keeps some of the best animals because he wants to keep them. And here comes Samuel, and he comes up to this situation, and he goes, "What's going on? Didn't you follow the commandments of the Lord?" And Saul goes, "Yep, sure did." And Samuel says, "Then why do I hear the bleating of the sheep and the oxen and all these animals? Why do I hear them making sounds if you really obey them?" And Saul kind of, you know, him-haws about this, And he explains why he didn't fully obey the Lord. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 24. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 24. I need to get to the right spot. Saul said to Samuel, "I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice." Why did Saul sin in this way? Can you imagine Saul going to the Amalekites and they're defeating the city and they're destroying it and there's all of these really nice animals here and all the soldiers are going, "Saul, we better keep these. God would really like these sacrifices. Saul, we better keep these. These are nice animals. We better not kill them." Can you imagine what was going on in Saul's mind? "Oh, God told me to destroy them. God told me to destroy them, but my people are not going to appreciate me if we destroy them. So we better keep them." That's what happened with Saul. He feared the people, and he obeyed their voice. You know what this shows us? We obey what we fear. Whatever we hold in high esteem, we obey. If I am interested in fitting into this world, I'm going to obey what this world tells me that I need to do to fit into it. Have you ever heard of churches our days that are starting to say that homosexuality isn't a sin and people can be married to each other no matter what sex they are? A lot of this fits into the overall concept of fearing what the world says about me and less what the Lord says about me. So on Final Judgment Day, we want to hear the words, "Well done, good and faithful servant," right? Do we want to hear it from Satan or do we want to hear it from the Lord? What are we trying to fit into? And the more highly we esteem the Lord, the more we're going to try to be like Him.